Welcome to Sports Day here on this Monday. Great to have your company. And we've got some bad news coming out of the Perth Wildcats. Paul Hazelby tonight as we go to air. Bryce Cotton is ill. It's not COVID related, but he could be missing in the game that's upcoming tomorrow night.
Take on the Sydney Kings and can't win without him being fully fit. But what about their performance? They got through against the previously unbeaten Melbourne United, and his three-pointer at the back end was instrumental.
I think he might feature, or they might feature in our slaps and sledges. They certainly featured for all the wrong reasons last week. The Aussies have been belted by the Kiwis in the cricket. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Our girls in the A-League got trounced on the weekend, and there's a lot more to talk about. But I think the big news was at Melbourne Park, and it was the end of the Australian Tennis Open. Naomi Osaka came away with her second Aussie title, and Novak Djokovic came away with his ninth title after defeating Daniil Medvedev. And the man who has done a brilliant job here on Sports Day, a hot topic for Repco, for expert car air conditioning service you can rely on, you visit repcoservice.com, is Brett Phillips, and he's off the top of our show tonight. Welcome, Brett. How are you, mate?
Gentlemen, always a pleasure to talk to you guys. And yes, it's been a nice day just to unwind, take a deep breath and, reflect on the last, it's 2 weeks of tennis, but it's really been probably a six-week campaign from the day the players arrived in Australia and all those chartered flights. We've been going pretty strong since the middle of January.
And you would probably say no surprise, because you were very strong in Naomi Osaka on the women's side of the draw, and Novak Djokovic, he was just too good for Medvedev, wasn't he?
Oh, unbelievable, Carl. I mean, I might have mentioned to you guys a few times, sitting in the bunker where we are at court level, you just see the movement. You see his agility, change of direction, the way he defends, it's just so hard to penetrate past him. And if you're using the cricket equivalent, I mean, he's bowling a Yorker most of the time because he's putting deep returns that are so accurate. They're just smooching the line and, really difficult to, get any sort of retrieval shot on any of his returns. So, and he came into that match last night serving 100 aces for the tournament. He built on that, and every time he was in, there was only maybe a couple of times when he had to dig himself out. He could go to the clutch ace or just really good placement on the serve and then try and beat Novak off the ground. And then at one stage, I think we counted, he was 11 from 11 from the net. So he got forward with conviction as well. And Medvedev has had a great run, 20 straight matches he's won, and he's beaten all the best players. But this is best of five Grand Slam tennis on the King's Court at Melbourne Park, and he's not ready to hand over the keys just yet.
All right, BP, let's settle this once and for all. The greatest player of all time, Djokovic, has got to be in the discussion. If he wasn't already, he's now got 18. You've got Federer, you've got Nadal. Give me your argument for each of those three before we get stuck into this.
Well, if you're purely going to judge it on statistics, and I do recognise that numbers matter, and they will down the stretch of this, because if you're looking at if he does win the most Grand Slams, and right now he has a superior head-to-head against Nadal and Federer, his two biggest rivals through this period, so that counts for a lot. He's about to have the most weeks as world number one. He's about to surpass Federer in the next week or two, which will be at 311 weeks as world number one. So if you're adding all these things up, and a year younger, likely to surpass both, then there's a fair argument, isn't there, that he is the greatest of all time if we're looking statistically. But, I mean, there's people saying right now that Serena Williams is the best player of all time and she hasn't got to Margaret Court's 24. So it's an interesting argument. For me, I've said it consistently, Roger Federer in my era of watching tennis has been the best tennis player to watch, what he brings to the tennis court aesthetically, but he mightn't end up with the best numbers. So maybe we just sort of I'm not trying to sit on the fence and get splinters, but maybe we just say, how blessed have we in the same era of seeing three absolute champions, that this next crop won't get anywhere near the numbers that these three have, because they're going to have to bloom a little bit later, because these guys are still going so strong into their 30s and they're all going to be pinching slams off each other. So, Medvedev and Tsitsipas and Rublev and team might only end up with a handful of slams each. So,
mate, you can get off the fence. Roger Federer is still the best by the length of the Flemington Strait. Still the best. He's won 103 career titles. The other bloke, who just won his ninth Australian Open, is on 82. So Roger is still 20 tournaments ahead. Now, at the same age, Djokovic may well catch him, but right now he hasn't caught him. He's not as nice on the court. He's not as nice off the court.
It doesn't come into it.
It comes into it for me, right? I'm giving you my opinion, not yours. You can give yours in a moment. But my opinion right now, Roger Federer is still the best by the Flemington Straight. Now, the other thing is that neither Federer or Djokovic are anywhere near as good as Rafael Nadal, who's a very, very good tennis player on clay. All of his wins, or a majority of his wins, are on clay.
Yeah.
We can throw into this debate about hard court and grass. Now, these two, Djokovic and Federer, measure up very, very well on both of those two surfaces, don't they, BP?
Oh, they do, absolutely. Roger, obviously, has the 8 Wimbledons. Novak's got the 9 Australian Opens. Rafa's got the 13 French. I mean, there are just so many angles you can come from here. But I mean, I agree, Carl. I think Roger Federer is the finest player that I've ever seen play the game. So does it have to be just about numbers? I've always thought it doesn't have to be. So it's all subjective, and people will make their own mind up. But, you know, universally loved Roger Federer. I think it'll be the saddest day in tennis when he departs, whenever that will be.
I will say he's the best to look at. As you said, aesthetically, he's the best to look at. That backhand we hadn't seen prior to that. But I think the level and the standard of tennis for Novak Djokovic when he came in for that period of time where he dominated Federer and Nadal, both in their prime, and all his Grand Slams have been with those guys playing. Where you look at Roger's Grand Slams early on, he didn't have those other two greats up against them. Yes, he had some coming out the back end in Sampras and Leighton Hewitt and Agassi and those types. But the standard for me across that time, and I think we underestimate the defence of Novak Djokovic. We talk about Nadal's defence, but Djokovic's ability to chase down balls and make his opponent play an extra shot every point, I've never seen that before.
No, Hayes, it's a great argument you mount. I mean, I agree, and that's what's lifting Osaka as well. I mean, the value of the return game is just enormous, and the coaches are putting a huge emphasis on that now. So, Wim Fassett would be saying to Naomi Osaka when he took over, and every player he's had, Kleister, Halep, Kerber, he's turned them all into better players, winning Grand Slams or making finals. And he would have said to Naomi, you've got one of the biggest serves in the game, it's Serena-like, you're big off the ground, powerful as an 18-year-old. So you can get through your service games really well, but there's no point on the return games just sort of, limping some balls back into court. And she would thump her right leg every time she would start a return game. Right, you could see it in the final. You could see it back to the US Open last year that she was going to put good strikes back and give no cheap points. And that's been the big difference. And her movement's better. So, you look at the Djokovic movement. He's just all over you. All over you constantly. It's just a nightmare for even a guy as informed as Daniil Medvedev was coming to that final last night.
Besides the obvious storylines that we've spoken about, what about for you, some of the other storylines to follow going through 2021?
Well, there's one guy I'm definitely going to keep an eye on. That's Aslan Karatsev, our man from Russia, who's now jumped 72 spots to 42 in the world. So he's guaranteed now to play the slams, all the big Masters events, doesn't have to qualify, his bank balance looks healthier. I mean, that should be the inspiration to anyone outside the top 100 that you just need one breakthrough and you can take off. And there's a lot of good players. I mean, the ATP Challenger Tour is quality between that 100 and 200 mark. So we'll see if someone can maybe do a Karatsev type run. So that was certainly the major highlight of the tournament, the real surprise packet. I've been thinking about the Aussies today as well, guys, and how we mark them, because even on a sports station over here like SEM, that we talk sport 24/7. There's not people ringing in saying, well, that's not good enough from Ash Barty, not good enough from John Millman to go high. There's not that pressure like there is on our footy teams and so forth. But I think our Aussies, I don't see a huge upside for a lot of them, to be totally honest. They are where they are, and I think a lot of them have probably maxed their talent. And some of them have reached a really good level. That's great. That's a good career. But I can't see any upside. So they're gonna battle away, and it's a shame, because there's a lot who've got some enormous talent that small margins decide whether you win or lose. And I just see players from other countries who maybe are just a fraction hungrier than our players, to be honest.
Good on you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
Brett Phillips, you'll be blown away with that car air conditioning service at Repco Authorised Service. Your book at repcoservice.com. So, Djokovic, you reckon? You serious?
I've got Djokovic.
Are you serious?
Got Federer. I want to hear from our listeners. Who do you think, give your reasons of who is the GOAT at the moment and who will be the GOAT when it's all said and done?
You know Nadal's won more tournaments.
He probably will win more.
He's already won more than Djokovic. Already won more.
I think because he's got the 13 at the one Grand Slam, that we probably rate that Grand Slam at the bottom end, don't we?
But do you just
maybe that's because we're Aussies.
But do you just rate it as Grand Slam events? I mean, there's only four that fit into the Grand Slam, but they are four Grand Slam events. To win the Grand Slam, you've got to win all four. But we've got to include all of these other tournaments because they all play in all of these other tournaments in various other parts of the world. And already up to this point in all of their careers, Djokovic is number three.
Yeah, but he's got the most Masters titles. So the tournaments where they've got just the best players in the world playing, he's won more. I just think his standard of tennis is the highest that we've seen for a long time. Federer is beautiful. I love him and the way that he was able to come back and win that Australian Open at the back end of his career. But Nadal going towards another French Open, he'll probably get to 21, and looking at him the other night, there's still more to come from him.
All right, I want to hear from you after this. 922 11 882. Give us your thoughts next here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season on now with match-winning deals.
All right, don't hold back. 922 11 882 is our number. Who is the GOAT? Is it Federer? Is it Nadal? Is it Djokovic? Is it somebody else? I'd love to hear from you, and let's go to Pete out in Netherlands. G'day, Pete.
You blokes are too young to remember a bloke called Rod Laver.
Rod Laver. Rod,
what he had to put up with when he was coming through. The self-righteous Wimbledon, they were just like the cricketers with Packer coming in. When Jack Cramer took them aside and picked all the best players in the world, all to come and play against each other, Hoad, Rosewell, Emerson, all the best players, Rod Laver would have served the ball, been into the net before Djokovic wouldn't even see which way the ball came. The only bloke that might be up with them would be Federer, and Nadal would be still pulling up his pants and scratching himself and bouncing the ball 17 times before Laver was even back to the service line. It's very difficult judging different eras, but he was an outstanding athlete, and when he came back from out of the cold, like the cricketers did come out of the cold, he wiped the floor at Wimbledon the first time he was back. So to think that he's come from a different era, don't sell him short. Believe me, he would have left these blokes for dead with all the equipment and the type of rackets they use today compared to an old wooden racket. He would be fantastic.
It's interesting. It's interesting you say that, Pete, and thank you very much for kicking it off. 922 11 882 for any old-timers out there who remember the very brilliant Rod Laver. Rod Laver, we were talking about winning 103 tournaments, Roger Federer, and in the 80s are the other two younger blokes. Djokovic is 182, Nadal's actually 186. Rod Laver actually won 200 during his time. And 200, 72 of those were in the Open era. So he's won 200 career titles, 72 in the Open era. He won the Australian Open three times, Wimbledon four times, the French Open twice, which is something that those two blokes, Federer and Djokovic, have only done once. And he's won the US Open. He won the US Open twice, but 200 career titles.
What about longevity with Rod Laver? How long did he play for? Clearly, he missed out on a few tournaments, as Peter said, but did he play well into his, 30s like these guys have? 39, Federer, the other ones are 35 and 34. Do you know that, Pete?
I think he lasted about 34. But when the professional trip were on, they played tennis at Perry Lakes, at Subiaco Oval and Kings Park. Now, you wouldn't believe that, would you? They actually took a section of Perry Lakes and Hoad and Rosewell, all these blokes played at Perry Lakes Stadium, and they also played between the two grandstands on Subiaco Oval. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. What about the players? You mentioned a few, Rosewell and a few others that he was competing against through that time, but in terms of absolute legends that are comparable to Nadal, Federer and Djokovic, did he come up against much?
Rosewell was the main one. Rosewell and Sages from America, but mainly Rosewell because he was fantastic.
But you wouldn't say they're up to the quality of the ones that we see right now, would we?
Definitely, yes, absolutely. He won Wimbledon. He came runner up at Wimbledon about 40. Rosewell, he was just a freak, And Hoad was just in another league altogether. But you can't compare eras. It's very difficult because they have different equipment, different fitness levels. But Labor was right at the very, very top. And you ask Federer, and the first person he says is Rod Labor every time.
Good on you, Pete. Brilliant start, mate. As I said, he turned pro in 1963, Hayes. He retired in 1979. So 1963 to 1979, he won 200 career titles, including those Grand Slam events that I've already spoken about. And his career record, he ended up at 78.4% winning record. 1,473 wins, 407 losses. Now, right now, that's marginally behind Djokovic. Djokovic is currently going at 83.1%. So he's 943 wins. Now, this is in ATP Tour Grand Slam main draw matches and in Davis Cup, right? He's going at 83.1. 943 wins, 192 losses. And Roger Federer is going at 82.1%. With 1,242 wins and 271 losses.
It's a great debate, isn't it? It's a great debate. Let's go to Michael in Canningvale. What does he think? G'day, Michael.
Okay, here's, follow my logic. Djokovic is a dominant Australian Open player. Nadal's the dominant French Open player. Wimbledon's the dominant for Federer. So who's won the most US Opens out of the three of them? Well, Roger's won five. So there's my tiebreaker.
Yeah, good call. And maybe we should just leave it at that. They're all greats and they're all special in their own courts that they dominate at. But Federer...
Well, Federer's won eight Wimbledon titles and at the moment the Joker's won five. But he has also got about how
probably
many
probably got four more chances, hasn't he?
Well, he's got six years. He's got 6 years on Roger right now. Roger's still going
and
around.
Roger's a freak to go as long as he has.
Well, that's why he's the best.
Yeah. Mate, I don't think Djokovic's body will allow him to go that far because of the way he plays. You see how he slides for the ball. You don't see Roger sliding and using his knees ankles like that.
You've forgotten.
Nah. Yeah. He's a beautiful player. And I love Federer the most.
Yeah.
But
you've
always
forgotten.
Had this argument. I haven't forgotten. I hope he comes back. Can he get one? Imagine if he got one more.
Good on you, Michael. Thanks for your tiebreaker.
Let's go to Craig. What does he think? Good day, Craig.
Hey, I'm going to throw a spanner in the works because I want to talk about females.
Go for it.
Serena Williams, I respect her as a tennis player, but not as with the things that she's done. Steffi Graf is my goat for the females. She only played till she was 30 and she got 22. So what do you think about that?
Oh, mate, absolutely sensational player. And had a remarkably... A remarkably good record. Of course, she...
On all surfaces.
Yeah, well, she won four Australian Opens. She won half a dozen French. She won 1-7 Wimbledon and 5 US Open titles. And she had an 88.7% winning record. So she won 107 career titles, which is third all time. And she played 900 winning matches and only lost 115 at the top level at 88.7, which is better than all those blokes we just spoke about. Clubhouse leader, you reckon, Craig? What do you reckon, Hayes, for the GOAT?
Yep. Well, my record's got to be up there too. She's still got 24. I didn't get to see her play as much, but Serena, geez, she had a period there where she was unbeatable. And, look, she strived really hard, hasn't she, the last 4 years to get that 24th. I don't think it will happen now because age does catch up with you. But let's go to Craig in Greenwood. What does he think? G'day, Craig.
Hey, boys. For me, Federer's a goat. Not only is he a champion on the field, he's off champion off the field. Much better character than Federer and Djokovic. And, well, look at their very best form. I think Federer's level is a little bit higher than those two. Just with that backhand, I think he just has that little bit extra. When they were all playing at the peak, at all the best form, I think his form is slightly higher.
It's funny, because Djokovic has got a better record head-to-head, and Nadal's got a better record head-to-head against Federer. So that goes against him. The two greatest players alongside him, he has a better record against.
Bit of a big age gap there, his, you know, so I think that's a little bit harsh. But also, you know, Federer is the only person in Australia to top, the only non-Australian to top Australia's favourite sportsman. Says all about him, I think.
Yeah, we love him. And look, I don't really like Novak Djokovic as a person and what he stands for, but I'm talking purely on a tennis basis. He's perfect in a lot of ways,
he's
Roger
not
Federer.
I mean, he's not that bad, though, is he, Novak? Is he?
Oh.
Hey? I mean, he's allowed
He had a bad year last year.
He's allowed
all the COVID and the parties and anti-vax, but that's his opinion.
He's not in his Pat Malone.
That against
he's not in his Pat Malone there. I mean, you know, a few of the youngsters out there thought that they were bulletproof.
And even
they worked out pretty quickly they weren't.
At the end of the tournament, we had a chance to thank the crowd and all the supporters. He thanked the court. He said, I want to thank this court because he has this love affair with Rod Laver Arena. But I felt he missed the mark where he could have made some friends. But I don't think he cares about that. He cares about being the greatest of all time, and I believe he is.
Beautiful. 922-982. Thanks for playing tonight. If you want to join in, you can at any time. We're going to get to Cal Toomey in a moment. We've got some slaps and sledges to do tonight. Just by the way, Margaret Court, she won 192 career titles, 92 during the Open era, turned pro in 1960, retired in 1977, has 11 Aussie Opens under her belt, 5 French Open titles, 3 Wimbledon titles and 5 US Open titles. Certainly very, very well credentialed and is well and truly in the argument. We'll come back, as I said, after this. Cal Toomey is going to join us. We're going to do a little bit of a whip around because the AFL season, remarkably, is only about 3 and a bit weeks away because we're at the 22nd of February and it gets underway on March 18. So we're going to have a bit of a look and a bit of a chat about some of those clubs that have had some intra-club matches and so on as we start to focus in on the AFL in the next few weeks here on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company tonight and a man that knows his stuff, Cal Toomey, who works for AFL.com, and it's nice to have him on the program, AFL.com.au, where you can get all of his latest information, features, shows, you can get anything that you like about the AFL right there. Cal, welcome to the show, mate. Thanks for your time.
Hey, guys. Yeah, good to be with you. And obviously, footy's starting to heat up, so getting pretty exciting now.
Mate, looking at it, it's already the 22nd of February, and it's only about 3.5 weeks away from getting underway. Now, I know that you've been around to a few of the clubs and you've had a look at a few of the intra-club scratch matches. Let's start with the Blues. How are they looking, mate? Can you see them rising up the table this year?
They have to. They have to make the finals this year. I think if they don't, it's a massive failure. And I think they've got the list to do it. From what I've seen across the summer, you're bringing guys like Adam Saad, Zach Williams, even Lachie Fogarty from Geelong has been a bit of a surprise so far in what he's produced over the preseason. So those guys have been standouts. But what I liked personally from watching their interclub a couple of weeks ago was Harry Mackay. I mean, he was kicking goals. He hit 5. He passed a couple off as well. Him and Sam Walsh look like they're ready to take their game to the next level. And Zach Fisher, I know, West Australian boy, I think he's really settled into that small forward role, and I think he'll be someone who can surprise this season too. So, look, I don't want to get Blues fans too excited, but there's every reason to be this year because I think the building blocks are all there. Now it's just ready to turn it on.
Hey, just with the delayed Fairest and Best, with the John Nicholls medal going to Jacob Wietering, any surprise there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think internally at the Blues, they were wrapped with this season last year. I know I was lucky enough to actually spend a week leading up to a game inside the Blues hub up in Gold Coast last year. And that was really interesting. And it did resonate with me after spending that week, just how important Jacob Wietering was to their lineup and how critical he is to their future plans. So it was a great result for him, the number one pick, ahead of another number one pick in Sam Walsh, who finished his year really well on the wing. So no surprise there. And I think it's a good sign, really, that some younger players have stepped up and it's not always just Patrick Cripps. So, yeah, a pretty deserving winner there for the fullback.
What about Mitch McGovern? What has he been able to do through the preseason?
Missed some footy recently with a hamstring injury. So it is meaning that he's likely to have an interrupted start to the preseason campaign and may not play until the round one game against the Tigers in a few weeks. So unlikely to play in the AMU Community Series clash for the Blues, and we'll miss this week's clash with Essendon too in the practice run. But yeah, so he's one that it will miss. Nick Newman will miss as well after having a flare up with his knee. Tom DeConning we know will miss as well. Eddie Betts will miss the preseason games too. And of course, Charlie Curnow's in the sidelines. But other than that, there is a lot to like about what the Blues are putting together.
Let's go to Collingwood. Their AFLW side is on fire, 4-0. But what about the men? Big exodus at the end of last year. How have they progressed through the pre-season?
Yeah, I've watched a bit of them train. And to be honest with you, I think they'll actually cope okay with the vacancies that have opened up. I mean, Josh Dacos in the sessions that I've seen has been outstanding. And you think about what he did last year on the wing. Well, I think he's probably ready to take it into a little bit more inside midfield time as well. Obviously, they need to fill the gap left by Adam Treloar in that spot and the wing spot as well by Tom Phillips. But yeah, there's a couple of players who've emerged as likely early debutants for the Pies as well in Ollie Henry and Finlay McRae, who were first-round picks last year and look at home already. So, yeah, look, there has been some turnover there, but if you look at a guy like Ollie Henry, and he's the younger brother of Jack Henry at the Cats, but a very different player, and they opened up that spot with Jaden Stevenson leaving Collingwood last year, being pushed out and going to North Melbourne. Well, I think Ollie Henry can be that type of player. He's the kind of rosy type of player who they can just bring into their forward line. So, look, I'm pretty bullish on the Pies, and I know there's been another sort of injury setback for Jordan Dugowie in the last day or so with a bit of a foot concern. So whether he plays this week in the practice game or not, we'll wait and see. But up until that abdomen issue that he had about 2 weeks ago, his preseason was outstanding. So, yeah, I think if they can get their forward line set up, I think the midfield will be still have enough guns to carry the Pies into the finals.
I can't get a read on the Bombers, but they do have 3 high draft picks coming in.
They do. I'm not sure we'll see heaps of them early in the season. Zach Reid, Nick Cox and Archie Perkins. Nick Cox started last week's intra-club for the Bombers, playing on the wing. He's 202 centimetres playing on the wing, running under 6 minutes over 2 kilometre time trials and the 20-metre sprint in about 2.95 seconds. So, I don't know, how would you go up against him in the midfield, Hayes?
He's too smart for him.
yeah, exactly right. But he can jump too, and that's what we saw at the intra club last week. He took a big hanger, and he's got a bit to go in his body shape and development. But yeah, if you put that aside, there's some real talent to work with. Archie Perkins missed a bit of footy with his ankle injury in January, so he's a little bit behind the eight ball. But as a midfield half forward option, is more ready to go physically. And Zach Reid is a little bit further behind the key defender. So look, there's optimism for some future players coming through, but I think the question mark on the Bombers will be how can they keep the goals. And Peter Wright's been playing obviously deep in attack through a Gold Coast recruit, and Harry Jones is a youngster. He didn't play last year. That was his first year in the system. He didn't play last year. I think he'll be almost locked in for a round one debut for the Bombers after a pretty impressive pre-season as a key forward.
Stringer and Dyson Heppel, what have they done?
Stringer's hurt his ankle/Achilles. It's in that region. I don't think anyone really knows exactly what the severity of that is. Been nagging him throughout pre-season. He hurt it again a couple of weeks ago. Been off his legs since then. So, look, he'll be touch and go for round one. Michael Hurley, we know, is out indefinitely with that bad hip infection. So, fingers crossed he can get back up and firing just health-wise before even hitting back to the track. He hasn't been sighted at Tullamarine for a couple of weeks now. And Dyson Heppel, the skipper, has been moved to half-back, which is, of course, where he started his career. He won a Rising Star at half-back in 2011, his first year at the club. And it made the best thing for his footy, because he's obviously missed a fair bit of footy with his foot and ankle issues last year, but he'll be right to go in round one. He impressed last week. And I think with the midfield group that the Bombers are building, they bring in Jai Caldwell, Darcy Parrish will take a step up. Andrew McGrath's a full-time midfielder now. Zach Merritt's still at the club, obviously, and he's a star and probably their best player. Dylan Shield as well. I don't think they need Dyson Heppel in the middle as much, so redeployed to half-back and we'll see how he goes.
Now, what about the Hawks, mate, who have got another hit out this coming Wednesday, and they're encouraging their members through the Hawthorn Football Club, hawthornfc.com.au, which you can access through afl.com.au, to stream the practice match live on Wednesday.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can't get in, so you can watch it online, and a lot of clubs will be doing that too. So if you can't actually access the ground, may as well access it via afl.com.au and the club sites. But yeah, the Hawks, I watched on Friday their interclub at Waverley Park, and there was a couple of new faces who did impress. We talk about Tom Phillips leaving the Pies, and he was outstanding for them. Playing a little bit more of an inside role as well in the midfield. He's beefed up. He's put on a couple of kilos. He's still got that great running power, but they'll use him in the midfield. They're missing Tom Mitchell with his shoulder injury at the moment. We know that James Sicily will miss basically all the year with a knee reconstruction. And Jack Gunston as well has hurt his back. So those three big guns we're watching on the sidelines. But it was Tom Phillips who was really impressive. I'm not sure how the Hawks go this year. I'd expect that they're really down the bottom part of the ladder. But those guys were impressive. And Connor Downey, a youngster who's searching for a debut in round one, was good too. And James Warple, the Warpedo, I reckon he would have had about 45 touches in this game. So he looks set for another good year.
You've also had a good look at the Saints and North Melbourne. Finishes off. We'll start with the Saints.
The Saints have been hit by injuries, haven't they? And it really does leave them in a quite a precarious spot with Rowan Marshall going down there, ruckman. Ben Patton, who was outstanding last year and under the radar pickup, really, and he shut down some of the best small forwards in the game, including, you know, Eddie Betts and Tom Papley and these type of guys, really shut them out of game. So they'll really miss him with his broken leg that he suffered last week. Dan Hannabury's in doubt for round one as well. We know the likes of Hunter Clark and Nick Caulfield are two guys who've impressed across the preseason as they enter their fourth seasons at AFL level. So there are a couple of guys who I expect to take a step up, as with Max King as well, from what I've seen. But Jade Gresham's another player who has had an injury-interrupted preseason with his back issue from last year. So, yeah, I mean, the Saints obviously made it back to the finals last year in the first time in a decade. They'll be wanting to go one more. They've gone really hard in their recruiting over the past 3 years. You know, Hannabury, Paddy Ryder, Brad Crouch, Bradley Hill as well. So a lot of big names have come in. Dougal Howard, Dan Butler, Jack Higgins last off-season too. So there's one that I think they'll be an interesting club to watch, the Saints, because the pressure will be on for them to go a little bit better than last year. And North Melbourne, well, it's, you know, it's the only way is up, I think, for North Melbourne, because last year on the road, they really struggled in the hub. But obviously, new coach David Noble, new game plan. They're trying to play a more exciting and speedy brand of footy, and they recruited for that last year as well, Stevenson being a big part of that. But they also drafted really strong, powerful sort of units. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they go this year. I'm a bit worried in terms of their key forward stocks. They obviously moved out Ben Brown. Charlie Combin has been missing, of course, with his injury. So we don't know when he'll be back, but that will be the most fascinating part about the Roos setup. Jack Zeeble, in terms of positional change, has moved to halfback. So I think David Noble wants to play him in that sort of Luke Hodge role and just see the game unfold from halfback and be able to take a bit of meterage and set things up. So that will be an interesting one to see how that one unfolds across the season.
Cal Toomey, thank you very, very much for joining Hayes and I tonight, mate. Love having you on the show and thanks very much for your time.
Anytime, guys. Happy to help.
Cal Toomey, afl.com.au is where you will read and hear all of the great work that he does. Welcome to Sports Day. If you'd like to join us and have your say, 922-11882 is
now with Match Winning Deals.
Welcome back to the program. 922-11882. Slaps and sledges for Sullivan Logistics. 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no. Love to hear your thoughts on each of those Victorian clubs, particularly if you're Barrack for any of those Victorian clubs. Carlton, Hawks, North, St Kilda, Essendon and Collingwood that we just had a chat to Cal Toomey about. Engage in the program. We'd love to hear from you on 922-11882. Hayes, the other thing that we haven't spoken about yet before we jump into a little bit more footy chat before we get to the end of this hour, mate, we got pasted in the cricket, all out for 131 in the 18th over. That's after New Zealand made 5 for 184 on the back of a brilliant innings by Devon Conway. We don't know much about, but 99 off 59 balls.
I think that's his third score in a row in the 90s. He put his name in the auction, the IPO auctions, and there was no takers for him. But after that match, maybe he gets another look. But we had them 3 for 19, Carl. We were doing well. The ball was moving early, and then that knock to get to 184 against our bowling attack was pretty poor, but well done to Conway. And then we were in trouble all sorts early. Mitch Marsh tried to resurrect the innings. He did pretty well, 45, but he ran out of partners in the end. He was our best performer. Jai Richardson, 2 for 31, and so he He took 4 for 28 for the Kiwis. More games to come, but we need to be better than that. But let's not forget, this is not our first choice, even though all those players are good players. We know them well. Josh Phillippe got his first opportunity. This was a squad chosen without our very best test players being available for that. So you wouldn't call it second string, but you'd probably call it one and a half string.
Right. As we get into our slaps and sledges, Hayes, for Sullivan Logistics, 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no. You've got to give a big slap on the back to Devin Conway, man of the match tonight, 99 off 59. Naomi Osaka, her second Aussie Open title. And, mate, she's making a name for herself, 23. Ash Barty's 24. So these are the sort of age group of where these girls are starting to really hit their straps.
She's got a better game, I think a bigger game than Ash Barty. Ash Barty's probably more crafty, but if she's got an opponent like that that can hit winners like she does, and she's starting to get a really good temperament as well, so she's going to be hard to beat. But I want to give a big slap to Willie Pike across the weekend. His performance over there at Caulfield to win another Group 1, though it was a dead heat. But I'm not sure if you saw the photo, Carl. It was amazing the way that he was able to spread his body, get up onto the front of the horse to push it down so that he could get that draw. He probably thought he won it going across the line because he had all the momentum. And then he got a second on Arcadia Queen, a second in the Blue Diamond for Godolphin on Ingratiating, and second with Perfect Jewel as well. Looks like they're set. The Peters Camp and Willie Pike for another big, what is it, autumn over there?
A very big autumn, yeah. Now, I'm sledging you on two fronts. On Friday night, I gave you one tip. Mm. One tip at Ascot. Race two, I said number 7, Vedette de Star. What happens?
Yeah, I said Vedette de Star.
Wins.
That looks good. That
it wins easy. And your wallet's empty, right? Yeah, yeah. And number 2, you said that the Perth Wildcats weren't going to beat Melbourne United on the weekend. So a big slap for the Perth Wildcats, a big slap for Bryce Cotton, who led the charge here, but a big sledge for you, who's really been the doomsayer about our Wildcats. You've really tested them with your own thoughts here. And are you surprised how they're just going up and down in their form at the moment? Because unbelievable, how can they just turn around and come back to what was a really good performance after the crap they delivered only a few days before?
I don't know how to judge them at the moment.
It's hard, isn't it?
You watch them one day and they look like world beaters, and then you watch them another day, they're all over the shop.
But I think that's where you're their best. Are you convinced now in what you saw on the weekend their best is good enough?
Two times they played Melbourne United, and the first time they were hindered because they had to travel.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, and they went close that time.
Mm.
So, yeah, they can beat the best teams, and looking at it on face value. Though if Bryce goes down and they lose this one to Sydney, because they're sort of the teams that they're competing with, but I think as the back end of the tournament comes and they get to come back here or the back end of the season, that's going to help them.
We need to take a break. Back soon.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Welcome back to Sports Day, the dig. Come on, who wants to have a dig at someone, something in the world of sport? Have you got something that you want to get off your chest? Do it right now. Come on, ring up, have a chat to Hayes and I, have a crack at something. The dig, dial before you dig, the first essential step.
I'm going to dig Channel 9, Carl. On Saturday, I was watching the tennis just leading into the women's final, and they had an advert come on TV of the men's final. Novak Djokovic playing, Tsitsipas. Channel 9, you need to be better. You've got to work out that Medvedev was the other player playing in the final. That was on Saturday, so maybe they tried to fast forward and guess.
Now, I'm going to have a dig, if it's true, and the allegations, and they're allegations at this moment in time. But Sam Burgess has been arrested after allegedly, and I repeat, after allegedly, failing a roadside drug test today. It just astounds me. It absolutely astounds me. It's been alleged that driving as well with an unregistered car. So at this point, it's all allegations, but a drug test and an unregistered car.
And they pulled him up for a reason.
Doesn't sound good.
Like, the police don't just pull you up and do a random drug test. So clearly there might be more to that, but that's a good dig. Jerry wants to have a go from Osborne Park. Go on, Jerry.
Hey, Boris. How you going?
Good, good.
Mate, I want to have a crack at the Aussie cricket selectors for one, for making Aaron Finch captain. When you got, I know he's getting on a bit, but on Reece is, captain of Big Bash finalist premiership, whatever you want to call them. So, yeah, and Finch is so out of form. I couldn't believe they even picked him in the side, the main captain.
But did you see how many of them made run? I mean, a bloke who's been in ripping form, Josh Phillippe, made two. Glenn Maxwell, that just went for $2.5 million, made one. Marcus Stoinis made eight. I mean, the only bloke that actually did anything, really, was Mitch Marsh of the top order.
Yeah, what did Finch make?
Finch made one.
He did make many through the Big Bash as well, and he has been out of form a little bit. It's like Tim Payne. How long do you keep going with these guys because they are in leadership positions? No, Payne has failed three times.
I'm not having a crack here at Jerry about throwing Aaron Finch up, but all I'm pointing out is that he wasn't on his Pat Malone tonight, Jerry. That's all I'm saying.
Boris, but he has been on his Pat Malone for about the last five, six games in the BBL, and yeah, he's in no form anyway.
He did deliver on the big stage, though, didn't he? Through the World Cup,
and the last time at international level, he was very good. Anyway, Jez, what else, mate?
Those bloody half-wits, or whatever they are, that are doing what they're doing to Willie Rioli, mate. That is just the total ridiculous I've ever heard in my life. You know, going that long before you can give a decision on something. It's just unbelievable.
Thank you, mate. I read the statement that was issued by Sport Integrity Australia. Now, it's a government department who have been challenged to come out and give us some clarity on the process and why is the process taking so long. Well, they have firmly handballed it back to the AFL. Now, we've heard Gil McLachlan come out and challenge ASADA.
Sport Integrity.
Well, it was ASADA previously, and now it's Sport Integrity Australia, which that changed on the 20th of January of this year. So it was only a month ago. But that was prior to it now being put back into their court. Now, I'm confused. If it's now in the hands of the AFL tribunal, what's happening behind the scenes? I mean, is there legal argument? It seems that the Willie Rioli camp, and certainly if you hear the rhetoric coming out of the West Coast Eagles, that they've wanted to expedite this process as quickly as possible for the well-being of the individual and get to an outcome. One way or the other, let's find out. Is it 4 years so that he can get on with his life? Is it 2 years? Because if it's 2 years, he's just around the corner of being able to recommence playing his football. The only substance that has ever been caught, or allegedly, he tested positive to, was marijuana. Now, if it's marijuana, mate, you go to counselling, you get over it, and you go and you're back playing in a couple of weeks because it's not a performance-enhancing drug. Now, I know he tampered with a sample haze, and I know that the penalty under that scenario is 4 years. Now, you're of the view that he gets 4 years. That's what you've been, I think, reasonably consistent in saying. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does. But, mate, let's get it done.
I was surprised with the comments by the Sport Integrity Australia group that they then liaise with the AFL with the penalty. I think they should be independent, the ASADA or the old ASADA or Sport Integrity Australia. They should give the penalty. That's what they're there for. They hand it down because I'm not sure you want the AFL back involved. That's where it got messy with the Essendon supplement saga, that there was this toing and froing where I think you just need somebody in a group independent to make those decisions, and everybody abides by the same rules, whether you're in one sport or another. And I know there's subtle differences between the different sports, but it needs to be made clear. And I was confused by those comments like you.
There's subtle differences between the sports, but the substances are all the same. Every single professional sporting organisation and the amateurs who compete in our Olympic Games are all under the same banner. All of our professional and amateur sporting associations at the elite level in our country have all signed up to operate, whether it be gambling, whether it be drugs, whether it be performance enhancing. It is all under the one regime. But one of the main mantras of Sport Integrity Australia is to educate. Now, right now, I see a massive failure on the education part, because we have people constantly, even the organisations themselves, asking questions about the process. So I think we can get better. And if it's taxpayers' money, which it is, that is setting up this particular organisation, then they've got to get, I think, far better at the education part. Muzza, good evening.
Good evening, boys. They've had a name change to what, Sports Integrity Australia?
Correct, yes. That's what
they wouldn't know what the word integrity means for a start. They want to just shut up shop and go and pack the bags and go jump in the bloody ocean. And the AFL are not handling it too well, I don't think. I don't know what you guys think about it, but it's just an absolute joke and a three-ring circus, to be honest, mate. And it should have been done within probably 6 months and sorted and a penalty handed down. And that's the same for any player that does similar things, I guess, like this. It's just an absolute disgrace and a joke. Fair dinkum.
I guess you've got to take into account, you know, how long the case does take and what the evidence is and whether the club might have, and I don't think they did, whether they sought longer so they could get their case together. But this is the same system, and it's totally different. But if you go to court or the Supreme Court here in Australia, if you're a company, sometimes you can't get in for a year and a half, 2 years, until you have your hearing heard in the federal court. So it's the way of...
But this is not the federal court.
No, I know, but I'm just giving an example that these things don't get expedited. And
yeah, but the federal court has hundreds of cases. Yeah. Now we're not talking hundreds of cases here. Now, Sport Integrity is sportintegrity.com.au is the web address. And when you open it up, these are the five things that comes straight up that what we do. Safeguarding. By providing a safe place to play sport and be active, we are safeguarding children and adults from harm. Sports wagering. We work with the sports wagering industry to help deter and detect fraudulent sports betting and match fixing activities. Anti-doping. As Australia's national anti-doping organisation, we are responsible for implementing an effective program consistent with international requirements and Australian legislation. Match fixing. We combat illegal activities such as match fixing by using a coordinated response. We work with government, sports regulators, wagering service providers and law enforcement agencies. And lastly, education. Educating athletes to keep our sports clean. Now, I think if you want to educate the athletes, you need to educate the community, because mums and dads need to understand so they can help educate their kids so that we can all be in it together. It's taxpayer-funded money that's propping up this organisation that, as far as I'm concerned, need to get better at what they're doing, because right now it's unacceptable. It's 16 after 7. Now, off the back of our AFLW best player discussion, nice to have this man on the program, because going along beautifully, our AFLW team down there at Fremantle, their coach Trent Cooper joins us for Gotta Love Your Local, Gotta Love the Bottle. Trent, welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me again.
Now, you've got a lot of wonderful players, and I have nominated Kiara Bowers as the number one pick. If I had all the girls lined up, she would be the one I would pick, because she's just bloody incredibly good. The game starts in the middle, and for me, she's worth her weight in gold. If you had them all lined up across the competition, who would you pick first?
Yeah, I'm with you. I might be biased, but I think a lot of the other coaches would as well. You see each week the coaches' votes come in, and yeah, she's got 10 again this week, so 3 weeks in a row she's got the best on from both coaches. The thing that sets her apart is she's probably equal with quite a few of the others offensively, but there's no one that comes near her defensively as a midfielder. So, yeah, I'm taking her in the schoolyard with the first pick for sure.
Taking out the age, I'm still picking Erin Phillips on the back of her 20 possessions. 4 goals on the weekend. I think in AFLW it's one in the forward half. You can have goal kickers, that makes a big difference. And you certainly got some goal kickers, but they took a bit of time to get rolling on the weekend, Trent.
Yeah, probably not surprising. Like we talked about, we really wanted to start fast, because I thought we actually started really well against Adelaide, even though we didn't score in the first quarter. I was quite happy, but we just knew, you know, coming off a 6-day break and late travel, that there was a chance that we'd start slow. And to Gold Coast credit, they were just first to the ball in that first quarter, and we couldn't get our hands on it enough to be dangerous. And then our backs, I thought, stood up really well. But when it went forward, I think our forwards were already working out how many goals each they were going to kick in that first quarter. But once they got their mind on the job of their defensive work as well, things started to happen for us.
Gee, Cuthbertson's become a really good player, hasn't she, Janelle?
Outstanding, yeah. She'd be right in All-Australian contention at the moment. like leading the competition, I think, for intercept possessions, but also getting the opposition's best forward each week. So she just reads it so well, so strong, and takes a good catch. So, yeah, we're really, really lucky to have her on board, and she's helped a few other players play slightly more offensive roles. So, yeah, we're wrapped with her progress.
My favourite player, though, she was the best player on the ground, behind Bowers, I must say, Gabby O'Sullivan. She just does the hard things every week. She doesn't always get rewarded on the scoreboard, but she sets up a lot of goals, and she got a lick of the ice cream on the weekend with her 2 goals from 16 touches.
Yeah, every week her effort is exactly the same, which is flat out, and her voice is always super important in that forward line. And, yeah, sometimes it'll come her way, sometimes it'll be the others, but we know what we get every week from her. And, yeah, like you said, she thoroughly deserved her awards of 2 goals too. And, yeah, she was definitely one of our better players in the weekend. And we know what we're going to get next week as well.
Now, Coach, how's pressure for spots outside the team to keep the momentum going?
Yeah, really good. Probably the best that it's ever been since I've been here. We had 6 girls play a waffle W on the weekend. That's a great thing now that the season's aligned a little bit, so that the girls can actually go back and have a crack and put their hand up, and we can watch how they play and give them feedback. So, yeah, Katie Jane Greve played well for Peel on the weekend. Bianca Webb and Michaela Hyde, who were both unlucky to go out of the side, had good performances down at Bassendean Oval. I watched that game on the weekend for Swan Districts in their win. Alex Williams and Anne McMahon back from long-term injuries. They had their first run around for Peel. And Maggie McLaughlin, one of our youngsters, she kicked 2 goals, 3 in Subi's win. So, yeah, it's a really good place to be now, to have a few headaches at selection. And it's good for those girls that they can, really, instead of just being at training, they can actually play and put their hand up for selection.
Now, Brisbane got rolled for the first time. They're your next opponent. They got beaten by Adelaide, and that was a really good game of football. And, of course, you were too good for Adelaide. So it's going to be a good test for you.
Yeah, because I think we caught Adelaide a little bit on the hop because they'd had a couple of soft wins. That probably hardened up Adelaide, who then played Brisbane, and Brisbane had 3 soft wins, and Adelaide really got hold of them early. But I thought the second half of the game, Brisbane were the better side and played really good footy. So, yeah, it'll be a tough game for us this weekend, Brisbane coming over here. We're really looking forward to a good crowd. I think ticket sales go on sale Wednesday, and it's Indigenous round as well, a game that we, as a club, pride ourselves on and performing well. So hopefully we get a good crowd there down there on Saturday.
Is tagging part of your mantra?
It's an option that I definitely consider, but don't do it too often. I think we've got a really good structure. So if we've got a good structure, once you tag, you take someone out of that structure. So it's something that we try not to do, but we do talk about it for most weeks if we do that, how it'll happen. But it's not normally plan A with us.
Because Greta Bodie's been one that's been really good, getting a lot of the footy and also getting on the scoreboard last few weeks.
Yeah, she's probably more of a forward, so it's just more of a back's job to look after her. But, yeah, a much improved player playing really good footy. So, she's one that we'll definitely keep an eye on, particularly when she's forward. And if she's in the midfield, then that'll just be a collective again where the girls will, whoever's closest to her at a stoppage, will take her and make sure that she doesn't push forward and hurt us in the scoreboard. Similar to when we played Adelaide, I thought our mids did a really good job with Erin when she was on ball. She obviously went forward late and caused a few problems, but when she's on ball, they share that load collectively.
Hey, Trent, can you give us some insight into your coaching journey with Roxy Roo? Early draft pick, does some exciting things, takes big marks like not many others can do in the competition, but it's been a bit of a gradual process to get her where she is playing right now, and she played well on the weekend.
Yeah, so I first had Roxy the state 18s. I think she was 15, turning 16, and we had her on a half-back flank just to learn the game because she was a raw talent but really didn't know a lot about sort of structured footy, and she just has got better and better. And I was wrapped with her game on the weekend. I thought she was really good. But actually, both coaches gave her a vote in the Coach Association Award. She competed so well on the ruck, and her forward pressure was really good. Everyone's saying she's not kicking as many goals, but she's doing a lot more ruck work this year, and that means she needs rest on the bench as well. So she's probably not playing anywhere near as many minutes forward, but her pressure there is great. And around the ground, when she's on ball, it's like just having four midfielders in there. So we're wrapped with her progress.
You mentioned the Waffle W competition that's just started. I was a bit surprised with the timing of that. In an ideal world, are you happy with the timing of that? And are you happy with the timing of the year of when the AFLW is currently played?
Yeah, the AFLW is an interesting one. Like, hopefully, you know, it'll get bigger and bigger. And I wouldn't mind if it's actually starts in November and goes through over that Christmas period where a lot of people are hanging out for a bit of footy. So I'm pretty open with that. But yeah, I like the Waffle W now where it is. It means that our girls can go back, play a game. And also at the end of our season, some of the girls will go back and finish off the Waffle W season, but that gives them a bigger break leading into our season. Last year, the Waffle W was finishing sort of too late, so most of our good players weren't playing in that competition. But this year, a couple of them might go back, and definitely our mid-range players and our younger ones, it's good for them to go back and play footy, because nine-round season, it isn't enough to develop as a player. So if they can play some more with those Waffle W clubs, it's good for their development.
Now, before I let you go, Hayes and I are going to Gloucester Park on Friday night for the $100,000 two-year-old race for colts. And we've
Dreamwalker,
got
really.
Our little race for Dreamwalker. Now, I know that you've had a look at the replay of the horse's race. What did you think? Come on, you're an expert.
Yeah, no, I think he's a horse for the future, definitely. He's did well to qualify for the final.
But I'm hearing a but here.
I just think that there's a few more precocious two-year-olds who are ready to go at the moment. I think your fella could be a good three-year-old. So, massive thrill to have a horse in a $100,000 final. And he's definitely not without a chance, because that two-year-olds can improve sharply and they can go backwards sharply as well. So, good luck for him. Hope he can get you a little bit of stake money, but I think you'll have a lot of fun with him over the next 3 or 4 years.
Good thing Dreamwalker doesn't listen to this show.
Oh, goodness me. I'm listening to him, though, and I agree with him. So we'll see. Good on you, Trent. Good on you, mate. Good luck.
No worries. Thanks, boys.
Trent Cooper there. Back to back, we'll have a chat to Daniel Pratt from the West Coast Eagles next. Great range-friendly service that independently owned by the locals. You've got to love your local. You've got to love the Bottle-O. Back soon. Welcome back to Sports Day. Coaches back to back, Trent Cooper and now Daniel Pratt from the West Coast Eagles. Pratty, welcome, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm going good. Thanks, guys. Obviously, coming off a loss is always disappointing. So, but back to the drawing board. But back to the process and keep working through our brand and keep building what we've done so far.
Yeah, haven't had a win yet. Are the girls staying positive?
Yeah, they've been pretty good overall. Obviously, the weekend they thought there were a chance to playing a team that were around us on the ladder that we could get it done, but just couldn't get over the line in the end. And yeah, we took some positives out of it, but there's still plenty of things for us to learn and plenty of things for us to keep improving on, which isn't really helping us at the moment finish off the game. So, yeah, the girls are positive, but we'll see what happens over the next couple of weeks.
Same old story, though, wasn't it? Great first half, really good pressure, and then just can't match it for that sustained four quarters at the moment.
Yeah, it was very similar to probably the rest of the season so far in regards to scoring in particular the second half, but I was really pleased with the effort in the third quarter. I thought we dominated lots of the important stats like field position and inside 50s and things like that, but we just couldn't convert on our opportunities, which credit to GWS are able to hurt us when they got their opportunities at the start of the last.
There are some positives, though. Let's go through them. Bella Lewis, 16 disposals, 10 contested, 9 tackles, did not win the Rising Star Award. I can't believe that. She's coming of age.
Yeah, you'd think that she's backed it up multiple weeks in a row already, so surprising that she didn't win it, but that's okay. I'm not sure who did win it. Maybe they had a really good, really exceptional game. So, look, she's been first class. She's probably been our best player along with Ash McCarthy, so it's been pleasing that the drafting from last year has paid off, and along with Bowen as well, who was our first pick the year before, we're getting some real growth in those two in particular.
Collier and Atkins as well. Let's talk about Ash McCarthy, an injury, and Imara Cameron, the other one that picked up an injury throughout the match. How are those two faring heading towards your next match?
Yeah, I think Ash is going to be okay. She's got a knee at the top of her shin on a nerve, and
quite painful, I've been told. So it's like getting hit on the old funny bone, multiply that by 10 times. So a bad one. So she fortunately was at the end of the game, and she was okay about half an hour later. And then, you know, Mara was just starting to get back into full fitness and copped a knock, and we were really looking forward to getting her through the midfield, which we weren't able to do because of that corky she had. So we're a bit banged up at the moment, but we're starting to get a few girls back. Had a couple through the waffle, and I think we get Neve Kelly back this week as well. So looking forward to that.
Your key defenders are trying hard, aren't they? Taylor Breslin crossed over from the Fremantle Dockers. She's been in really good form the last couple of weeks. And Chantella Pereira, although she had a few kicked on her on the weekend, I think she's one to continue to work with.
Yeah, Breslin's been really good for us so far. Like, she's crossed. She's agreed to play really well. She had a couple of moments as well that she'd probably rather forget, like all of our defenders did. But I thought she fought back from those moments really well. Smith's been going really well. And then, you know, Pereira, she came off no pre-season into her first game against Fremantle the other week, and we had no one else available. So hopefully these couple of runs now, we'll start to see some benefit with her fitness, and probably a few of our backs are just lacking a bit of touch because of either they're new to the game. Like Gauchy played her first game, and Ward played her fourth, and you know, Sophie McDonald played her sixth game or something like that. So really young down there, but you know, if we can sharpen up a bit down there, hopefully they can win us a game or two in the next few weeks.
Prady, I look at both teams, Fremantle and West Coast, and I look at the forward line of Fremantle. They've just got options. They've probably got four or five girls that can kick multiple goals, but probably the area of your team at the moment that is probably not kicking enough goals, I guess, given the supply that is coming in there.
Yeah, it's been a funny one. I think that in the first halves, we've been able to get the ball in nice and deep and create really good opportunities. And you know, I think we had six shots or seven shots on goal in the first quarter against Brisbane, and didn't take those. And then last week against GWS, we did 3-1 in the first. So we're getting the ball deep enough early. But I think as the game goes on, those entries get shallower and shallower, and it makes it difficult to score, especially when you're 40 to 50 in the women's game. So obviously, you know, finding avenue to goal that you regularly have has been difficult for us, but I've been happy that there's been multiple players bobbing up. It's just if we can get someone to do it, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in a row, and they get, you know, hit the scoreboard with 2 or 3 or 4 goals, will really help us win a game.
Now, you're not on your own when it comes to having a winless start to the 2021 season. Richmond, Geelong and the Gold Coast, who got a touch-up from Freo. They scored only 6 points in the contest. They are your next opponent. Surely you can win this one.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? I think looking at the scores can be sometimes... you sort of think, oh, here's our opportunity. But if we've got to probably get back to and just focus on what's made us a good team in the first halves of most of the games and keep doing it for longer. I think Gold Coast first half was really good on the weekend, and obviously Freo's experience really opened them up in the second half. So I'm hoping that the girls can just focus back on what makes us a good team in those parts of the game and keep doing it for long enough. And I'm sure if we can do that... will give us a really good chance to win, but if we don't, it's going to leave us vulnerable to another loss. So hopefully it's a positive chat next week in regards to that, boys.
Hey, Prady, just having a look at, say, the more established teams, which are featuring up the top of the table right now, and obviously Fremantle have been on a wonderful winning run, Collingwood, Brisbane, Adelaide, these clubs that have been around a little while. From your perspective and coming in now fresh, only the second season as a new club, what's been, I suppose, the biggest challenges?
Well, it's probably the average age, I guess, or experience of our list. You know, we're in a development phase, as is the other teams you mentioned before, you know, Carlton and Richmond Richmond, Geelong and the Gold Coast. And, you know, it's difficult to compete against these teams at times who have been in the system for 5 years. So improving by 10% every year isn't going to cut it at the moment, and because everyone improves by 10% every year. So the challenge for teams like us at the moment is, firstly, we've got to draft really well and then continue to develop. And the growth's probably got to be more around 20% a year rather than whatever the average is, 10%, say. To catch up to those teams. So I've watched a few of the other games now when the top teams have played, and they find good avenues to goal and they defend really well behind the ball, especially when the other team puts them under pressure. So they're the challenges for all the teams, I think, who are in the same position as us at the moment.
Praddy, we've been having a good chat tonight about who is the best player in the AFLW. If you can only choose one that you could draft into your team, who would you take right now?
Oh, geez, that's a hard one.
I know who I'd take.
Where would you take, Cal?
Well, I've already had this discussion with Kay. She wears purple down the road and lays 15 tackles a game.
Oh, Bowers, yeah, she's a very good player. Yeah. Obviously, having good mids helps.
Yeah.
I think probably from our end, key position player would be good. So I think players like Randall and Phillips and Houghton, there's a few others from other clubs who they find ways to goal or they're able to stop scores. So if we get a player like that, I'd probably rate one of those three or four I've just mentioned as probably the best in the comp so far. And I think Bowers is leading the coaches' awards at the moment. So he's going very, very well.
Yeah, game starts in the middle, Praddy. Good on you, mate. Thank you very much for your time.
Cheers, boys. Have a good night.
Good on you. Daniel Pratt there, our coach of our West Coast Eagles. And, of course, if you do want to have your say, if you go to Sports Day WA, you can make your thoughts heard there, have some debate with us and join in the topics here on the program. On this day for Barra and O'Day, we'll come back and we'll tell you what happened on this day next. Now we finish off, Hayes, with on this day for Barra and O'Day, because the little things are everything.
They certainly are, Carl. On this day in 1991, Sanath Jayasuriya made his Test cricket debut against New Zealand. He went on to become one of the all-time greats, and on this day, Took Miller and Tom Rockliffe celebrate their birthdays, all for Barra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything, Carl.
Now, if you missed a little bit earlier, we were belted in the cricket by New Zealand. Australia were chasing 185 for victory after Devon Conway made 99 off 59 balls. Well, all out for 131 in the 18th over. Sodhi, 4 for 28, his best career figures, and we lost by 53 runs. And some news tonight about South's great Sam Burgess allegedly failing a roadside drug test. He has been arrested. So some big news there, Hayes.
It is, Carl. Let's hope Bryce Cotton can pass his fitness test. A little bit ill, but no COVID-19. That's the positive. But without him, very difficult to get it done against the Kings tomorrow.
Yep, it will be. Nice to have your company tonight. Hayes and I will be back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. We'll see you then.